Blog Talk Radio.
Tiger DJ Southeast Vince coming at you from a place called Durham, North Carolina. And this is Black Eye Color Only on CNM Radio. On this show, I will discuss current events and issues that affect the black race, and I will take on the apostles of black. Hopefully, you'll get something from the show, and if you have a question or a comment, make sure you season it well. With respect, or I'll push the kick button, and you will suffer the curse of the fruit bat. So don't come here being a fruit bat. This is a fruit bat free program. You are listening to Black Eye Color Only. Out there, hope today finds you doing well. Welcome to the show. If you would like to be a guest to call in, the call-in number is 646-478-5284. That's 646-478-5284, and you can call in and discuss or question anything about the subject matter, but I will give you a word of warning. There will be no ad hominem attacks, character assassinations, insults, disturbing the show, trolling, excessive profanity, things of that sort. If you engage in those activities, it will prompt me to push the kick button and you will suffer the aforementioned curse of the fruit bat, which means you will be either ignored or kicked off of this show. So I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me, just be respectable in your interactions on this show, and it should be a good one for you. Okay, so we got that. Oh, boy, folks, I tell you, it's been a long week for me, and not saying that it's been a bad week, but it's been kind of a hectic week for me on my job. For a few days, my boss was missing, so I had to but he was on vacation, and I had to take care of things by myself. I think I did a fairly good job, made a couple of mistakes here and there and everything. He wasn't hard on me about it or whatever. I made it through, you know, and every morning I get up and I pray and I say, Lord, just help me get through this day, no matter what comes up, you know, help me to make it through the day, you know, because a lot of people, they have this thing that, If you just pray hard enough to God or whatever that nothing bad should happen to you, you should never have a bad day, you should never struggle. But that's not what I pray. I don't pray that, because we all have hardships. I don't care how rich you are, how poor you are, how famous you are, how obscure you are or anything like that. We all have our struggles, and we all have our setbacks and our bad days and whatever. And so when I pray, I don't say, God, help me not to struggle today. I say, Lord, if I do struggle today, just help me get through, you know. So, but that's what I do. But had something that happened Thursday. My boss had just gotten back, and, you know, he was getting back into the swing of things, and trying to get back into you know, the rigors of work and everything. And let me do this. Let's do this. Gotta get some things up here. But we were trying to, you know, go through the get things back in order and whatever, because, you know, with him gone, some things were out of whack. And, not long before I left the job, he gets an email. And he asked me, he said, "Vincent, did you get your immunization shot?" And I said, no, because I caught COVID in December. Caught COVID in December. And one thing I always understand is that when you catch a disease or whatever, you recover from it, your body builds up an immunity to it. And, well, folks are not, let's just say that the powers that be don't have faith in people's immune systems. So it is being mandated that I go get a COVID shot, because I work for a hospital system. Even though I don't exactly work in the hospital, I work in a warehouse. I don't have anything to do with patients or anything like that. What I do is I take orders for computer parts that they use in the hospitals. But we're still considered a part of the UNC, which is University of North Carolina hospital system. And they said it's been mandated that we need to get an immunization. And now let me tell you all something. I'm not anti-vax. So if you're coming on here and you hear me explain the things and you say, "Oh, you're one of those anti-vaxxers," I am not anti-vax. If you want to get an immunization shot, then you should go ahead and get it. But I feel like that this is my body and I can make my own decisions, make the best decisions for my own body. And usually, you know, when it comes to abortion, people make this excuse for the ladies having an abortion. Well, it's their bodies, you know, and they can make whatever decision they want for their bodies, you know, my body, my choice. But it seems kind of strange to me that when it comes to something like getting an immunization shot, and you're coming up with a decision that you think is best for you, all of a sudden that just goes out the window. You want to kill your baby? My body, my choice. Oh, okay, it's your body, your choice. But when it comes to a shot, getting a shot for COVID, which, you know, COVID it's been only fatal in less than 1% of all the cases. You know, no, you got to get that shot, you know. And I really do believe this comes from people's fears. I really do. I really seriously believe that this comes from a fear of this disease, you know, because you got people who are germaphobes and, you know, don't touch me, don't come around me, make sure you got your mask on, you know, things like that. It's real nerve-wracking when people do that, too. It really is. But, you know, because I work for UNC, you know, I have to get immunized by September the 21st. Do I want to get immunized? No, I don't. Because I feel like I already got immunized in December. Around Christmas time, I got real sick. And let me tell you all something. Hey, Retta, how you doing? I'm doing good. Good to see you on Getter. But I got real sick in December. My wife and I, we got real sick. And it was probably the sickest I've been since childhood. And let me tell you all something. Getting COVID is not something that I would wish on my worst enemy. You could be the worst person out there. You could be the worst person out there, and, you know, I still wouldn't wish this on you. I got real sick, really sick. Not half dead sick or anything like that, but I had to stay out half of December you know. And my wife got sick too. And it wasn't a pleasant thing. I'm just going to be honest with you. It was not pleasant at all. I didn't get to enjoy the holiday, you know, because I was sick. And to me, the worst part of it, though, was what it did to my senses, to my taste and to my smell, especially my smell. I mean, my wife would cook my wife was cooking a turkey wing. And I came out and I said, honey, is that trash that I smell? It smelled like trash. You know how nasty trash can smell. And I was like, is that trash? My wife was like, no, I'm cooking a turkey wing. I said, honey, I declare it smells like trash. And it just absolutely did numbers on my appetite, you know. For a couple of days, I wouldn't eat. It was something I didn't want to, you know. I was like, okay, you know, I can say I've had it. So, you know, but right. I got a dilemma. I got a serious dilemma, you know. But it's like you're between a rock and a hard place. And what the doctors tell you, and I do not believe this, okay. But what the doctors tell you is if you catch COVID, you only have an immunity for 6 to 8 months. I call bull on that. I really do. I'm a person who I've read a lot of history and whatever. And y'all remember that plague called smallpox back in the day, back in the, what was it, the 15th century, the 15th or the 16th century. When the settlers came over from Europe, and because the Native Americans here, they didn't have an immunity to smallpox, it just basically wiped them out. But that's not to say that the settlers had never had smallpox before. A lot of them had mild cases of the disease, which is why they were immune to the plague of smallpox. And why it wiped out the Native American populations. And a lot of these people, they had smallpox when they were children, and they had built up an immunity. Back in the sometime later, when the Revolutionary War occurred, you know, some of the men who were suffering with smallpox, one of the first instances of inoculation was they would take the pus from the sores of one of the soldiers and infuse it with another soldier to help them build up the immunity to this disease. Now, why doctors are saying that you only have an immunity for 6 to 8 months, I call bullcrap on that. Because I believe that once you fight off a certain disease, your body builds up an immunity to it, and that immunity can last for more than, it can last for maybe 30, 60 years. But that's not what they want to think, you know. And I think there's a lot of deception going on with COVID. You know, we had the doctor, Fauci. At first he said, you don't need a mask. Oh, you need a mask. Oh, you need two masks. You need to... He didn't even know what he was talking about. And let me tell you, it's a lot of you all out there who are, I don't know what the real word for it, but I just call them germophobes. A lot of you all, because, you know, you hear about a disease, oh, stay away from me. Me, I really wasn't all that concerned about COVID. Don't get me wrong. Don't think that I'm saying that COVID was, I didn't think COVID was serious or anything like that. Matter of fact, when I found out that I had COVID, I was like, okay, I got COVID. I was like, I got COVID. Oh, the humanity. I was like, okay, I got COVID. You know, I mean, I wasn't concerned about it when, you know, I wasn't as, you know, like, oh, I got to look, you know, look under every rock and everything, make sure COVID isn't around. Now, I don't know how I contracted COVID. I have my guesses at how I contracted it. But let me tell you all, I wore my mask like I should have. Everywhere I went, I wore my mask. Go to the grocery store, wore the mask. The only place I wouldn't wear a mask was in my car and at home. But on the job, it was a strict mask mandate, and I wore my mask. So, you know, I don't believe the mask really worked. I really don't. And now they're trying to cook that up again. They're trying to bring that up. You know, you got to wear the mask, and, you know, and it's kind of funny now that they're trying to bring that up again, because they were starting to lighten up on the mask mandates, and now we got this Delta variant coming out, and it seems kind of funny to me that we're getting close to the beginning of another school year, and a lot of kids have been out of school for, you know, upwards of a year and a half or 2 years maybe because of this pandemic. And I think the powers that be are like, okay, you know, let's listen to the teachers unions and let's hear their take about it. And teachers unions like, well, we can't have the kids come back to school. You know, I'm not so sure if there is a Delta variant. It could be. Don't get me wrong, people. Don't get me wrong. But I've gotten to a point where I do not trust what I hear on the news. I've gotten to that point. Because there's a lot of lying going around, and a lot of people saying things they don't even know what they're talking about. And, you know, hey, whatever. that's how I say, but you know, they told us we have to, they're mandating us getting a vaccination. And I'm not happy about it because I'm afraid that the shot will kill me or anything like that. That's not what scares me. What bothers me is that I've made a decision for myself. Made a decision that I thought was good for myself. That, you know, I'm not going to take the vaccination. And a lot of people, they have this thing, you know, they're going around, I thought you were a Christian. You know, you're supposed to love your neighbor, so you need to get that vaccine. That has nothing to do with me wanting to get a vaccination. Now, it could go both ways. Now, if you talk about loving your neighbor, wouldn't you love your neighbor enough to say, okay, well, you know, if you want the vaccination, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine. That's loving your neighbor, too. So the door swings both ways. You know what I'm talking about? But I don't like someone coming in and telling me that they know what's best for me better than I do. That's the problem I have. I don't like people telling me that we know more than you do about yourself. You know, last week, some Texas lawmakers, they wanted to go on a run from Texas, and all of them, they were on a plane, and they didn't have no mask. They didn't have their masks on. And these are the same people that tell you, you better wear a mask. You know, you see any other picture of people on a plane, everybody has on their mask. So why all of a sudden these Texas lawmakers, they get on a plane, and they don't have their masks on? It's a question I like to have answered. I guess they feel like, hey, rules that apply to thee don't apply to me, you know. But it turns out several of them have gotten COVID. I think I heard the last number was six of them have gotten COVID and said they have been inoculated. They have received the vaccine and they still caught COVID. And not only that, some of these people interacted with our great, are just superb Vice President Kamala Harris. But they didn't tell Kamala, you need to quarantine for a while and, you know, you might need to get inoculated, you know, get that little sticky, you know, and everything. She told them she wasn't going to get it. So she can sit there and say, I'm not going to get the vaccination or quarantine or anything. It's like, oh, you're not. Oh, okay. But don't leave that to the common citizens to say that. No, you're getting that inoculation. And it seems like the higher ups, they can do whatever they want to. They can make the laws and the rules and everything, but they don't have to abide by them because, oh, we're special because we're up here, you're down there. That's the problem I have with these. That's the problem I have with these people in the government. This is why I don't trust these rascals. I don't trust them. I don't trust them at all. I don't trust a thing they say. I can sit there and watch the news and hear them talk blah, 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 blah. I don't trust a thing you all say because I am convinced that you all really don't care about the citizens. All you care about is the power that you wield over the citizens. And yes, I do believe that. I don't believe these people really, I don't believe they care about you dying of COVID or anything like that. I really don't believe that. I just think they're using COVID as a way to gain more power over the people. I'm serious. Now, if I'm wrong, prove me wrong or whatever, but that's I seriously believe that. And I don't care if you've got an R before your name or a D before your name. I don't think you guys really care about us. Every 4 years, you get out there, oh, you got to vote, you know, your vote is your voice, and your vote is your most important asset and everything. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. All you care about is my money and my vote. That's all you care about. Now, I don't want to sound I don't want to sound like I'm an anarchist. I'm not an anarchist, okay? I'm not one of those type of people, you know. And, you know, when they started this whole crazy mask thing, no, I didn't agree with it, but I said, you know, I'm going to follow the law. I don't agree with it, but I'm following the law. I'm not going to go out there and say, shoot, I'm a rebel. No, I'm not that type of person. But I do have freedom of speech, and I can tell you how displeased I am with my government. Thank God. Thank God I don't live in China, because if I talk like this and I'm in China, what happened to Vincent? What happened to him? Oh, he got disappeared. Disappeared. I told him about talking that radical mess on that Blog Talk Radio. That's what I think. Even though I don't like the way certain people are running this country, I still love living here because I can still speak my mind without any repercussions from the government. You how dare you speak against our government? Into the slammer for you, you know. Even though you got the powers that be in this country, they're trying to wear down our rights little by little. They're trying to do it little by little. They're not going to come right out and just, okay, your rights are gone. They're going to try to wear them down little by little. Like a few years ago when Barack Obama was in office, he come up there. Let me be clear. We are not going to come for your guns. And I'm like, yeah, you say that, but the ultimate goal is that you want our guns. Now, they're not just going to come out and jump out and say, yeah, y'all give me all your guns now. And they're going to wear down on your rights little by little. It's just like when the waves of the sea pound against the seashore. You can't see it, but little by little, the rock that they pound on is being eroded a little bit every day. Until one day you'll look up and say, hey, what happened to that big rock right there? Oh, all them years and everything, that water kept beating against it, finally gave away. That's what they're trying to do. Now, I know you had that jerk, I forgot his name, during the Democratic convention last year. He said, yeah, we're going to come for your guns and everything. And you all see where he is now. He didn't get elected. But when they get up here and they say, oh, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. I don't believe you all. One iota. Because I know how y'all work. I know how you work. But like I said, I'm not an anarchist. I'm not against the government. I'm not saying we shouldn't have a government or anything like that. I'm not saying we shouldn't have elections. I'm not saying we shouldn't have presidents or anything like that. All I'm saying is I don't trust these rascals. I don't trust them. I just don't. Never have. But I'm not going to be a bonehead and just come out here and just be big-time rebel out here either. But I feel like when I make a decision for myself and my family, that decision should be honored. But these rascals, they think they wield so much power that they feel like they can override even my own sensible decisions. And that's what I don't like. Well, you're putting everybody else in danger. Okay, you wearing your mask? You think the mask protects you? Why are you worried about whether I'm vaccinated or not? You got your vaccination. You think that vaccination is protecting you? Why are you worried about whether I have a vaccination or not? You got people who got their vaccination. They still wearing a mask. You got the vaccination, but you still wearing a mask. Why? You should be protected. Now, to be honest with you, like I said, those Texas lawmakers last week, what I heard was they got their vaccinations. That's what I heard. But six of them still contacted COVID. And I'm like, okay, I thought the vaccination was supposed to protect you from COVID. But you see the confusion that's going on, you know. Oh, the vaccine protects you against COVID, but put your mask on. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, there are people out there who have gotten a vaccination, but they're still catching COVID. It's just confusing. It's just a massive confusion. And that's the type of atmosphere a lot of governments like to work on, like to work in, because they love it when they're citizens are confused, because that's when they can come in and sneak their little mess in to legislation. I didn't take the flu shot, and I'm not taking a COVID back either. Yeah, I was forced to take the flu shot too, because I had never taken a flu shot until last year, because I was working for UNC, you know, and it was mandated that you had to take a flu shot, and I took two of them last year. One in March and one in September. And I'm still trying to explain that one. I don't know. Maybe that led to me catching COVID. You know, maybe my immune system was so screwed up. It was like, you know, oh, COVID, just come on in here. We're trying to discuss some things here, you know. And yeah, they are really pushing this one. They really are pushing this vaccine. Get the vaccine. Get the vaccine. Oh, you're an anti... No, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I am not an anti-vaxxer. I just want to be able to make the decision that I think is best for me and my family without the government coming in and saying, no, you got to do this. Because to me, that's borderline communism. And you all can throw out all the Bible scriptures that you want to. Seems like the only time y'all like to throw out Bible scriptures is to push your own agenda. But any other time, you don't even acknowledge the Bible. So don't even push them, oh, you got to love your neighbor. This is part of loving your neighbor. Yeah, okay. But my neighbor doesn't love me enough to realize that I'm a sensible person who can make the best decisions for his family. Okay, all right, I got you. But this is why I don't trust our government. They think they have our best interests at heart, and they really don't. All they care about is their power. How can you explain people being in Congress since the 70s and the 80s? Instead of them getting up and saying, you know what, I had my time, this is it, boom, let me go. I mean, the president can have no more than two inaugurations, two terms as president. So why are we letting these congressmen and congresswomen get as many terms as they like? We need to have term limits on them. We really need to have term limits on them. Lord knows, Maxine Waters and Sheila Jackson Lee and all the rest of them, Nancy Pelosi. Shoot, those are the people that need the term limits. But yeah, I'm pretty disappointed. You know, some people say if anything you should sue. I don't want to go that route, because when you sue people, when you sue somebody, it takes a lot of money. It does, and I just don't have the money to fight it. But I have until September the 21st, so that's about a couple of months. But I just don't like people thinking that their best interests override my best interests simply because you are in the government. I just don't. I don't like that. Yeah. Term limits for everyone. They all need term limits. Shoot. We had an old knucklehead mayor in Durham, North Carolina. Finally got rid of him, named Bill Bell. He'd been, I forget how long he was here. Every time I look up, he getting reelected. And he just got to the point, I guess he's getting old and everything. He was like, okay, y'all, that's it. Boom. Well, see, Retta, I'd have to get checked by my doctor to see if it's... I'm really not afraid of the danger of it. I'm really not. I'm not afraid of the danger. I'm not afraid of some complication coming up from it or anything like that. But probably, maybe I could do that, you know. Go to the doctor and, you know, see, you know. But see, here's the thing. I don't trust doctors. Because when I went in to, because I had a nasal infection a couple of months ago, and they told me, well, have you had COVID? And I said, yeah. And they asked me, well, when did you have it? I said, in December. And they said, well, it's been 5 months. You got another month of immunity. And I'm sitting there like, another month of immunity? You know. But maybe that's what I need to do, you know, because this is my decision. I don't need you making a decision for me. You know, but hey, we'll see how it plays out. We'll see how this thing plays out, you know. But I just don't trust. I don't trust government officials. I don't trust doctors. I don't trust lawyers. I don't trust our government. The path is getting very narrow for me for people I really trust. Really, typically, if you want to put a dime on it, right now, as far as people that I know personally, the only person I really trust outside of myself is my wife. That's it, you know. And just because I say I didn't trust you, you know, you might be a friend of mine or anything, that doesn't mean we can't be friends or anything. That doesn't mean I don't really trust you or anything like that, you know. I'm talking about people I know personally. But, yeah, and, you know, it is what it is. This is the world we live in, things like that, you know. But anyway, wow, I almost lost my train of thought there. Basically what I have to say is I don't know if you all have been listening to our news media and our government officials this week. You all know last year, the big push was to defund the police. That was the big push last year. Defund the police. Caller, I see you there. Can you just hold on? Just be patient with me. I'm going to get with you. Defund the police. That was a big thing being pushed. Defund the police. Oh, the police, they chasing down black people. They don't care about minorities, and all they are is a terrorist organization. And they all they're out to do is get black people, get black and brown people, put them in jail and things like that. We need to defund the police. Oh, we're getting too many black people being killed by the police. Oh, man, it's genocide. Oh, the humanity. Oh, wow. Yahweh, Retta, why you got to be stealing my thunder now? Why you got to be stealing my thunder? Retta's right. Defund the police was a Democratic talking point. It was a liberal Democratic talking point. But, oh, wait a minute now. Now that the police have been defunded, I think in New York City, Retta, because you're up in that area. I think in New York City, they cut $1 billion from the budget for the police officers up there. And the police are like, bump this. Y'all going to cut us? You know, y'all ain't like, we're the bad guys. So some of the police officers, they slow down their response times to a police call, or some of them just quit altogether. And as a result, crime has skyrocketed in our cities. And now, and I'm going to tell you, this is a result of demonizing the police, making them out to be the bad guy. Now, folks, let me say something right now. Let me say something. I do believe there needs to be some reform of our police officers, and not because of their interaction with black people or anything like that. Because I do not believe that the police officers are out there hunting down black people. Now, being a police officer has its flaws. The police force has its flaws, just like any other profession that you may work in. If you're working in medical care, you got your flaws there. Police officer, food worker, wherever you work at, people have their flaws, and the police are not perfect. Is that because of the police, Retta? When you leave your house, you ain't safe. Is it because of the police? I would think not. But a lot of people pick that. That's the picture that they want to paint. That if you are black and you step outside of your house, you're in some target site of a police officer, and they're hunting you down. They're looking for black people because they don't like black people. That's why so many of us are in prison, because the police don't like black people, and they have some sort of quota, and they got to meet their quota of black people that they harass on a daily basis. That's what it sounds like. That's what it sounds like to me, what people are saying. But now that crime has skyrocketed as a result of the budgets for police officers being cut, it's, you know, now... this is why I don't trust our government, because they think a lot of us are stupid, and to some extent, some of us are stupid. Because now they're saying that it was the Republicans who were talking about defunding the police. And I'm sitting there like, okay, that offends me. You know why? Well, I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. But still. Now they're saying that it's the Republicans, those people on the right, they're the ones who said we should be defunding the police, not us. And you know what? I guarantee you there are people out there like, yeah, it's the Republicans. It's their fault. Yeah, George. And I'm sitting there like, who was pushing defund the police? Like, it was just last year. Who was pushing it? It wasn't the Republicans. It wasn't the conservatives. It was the liberal Democrats pushing that garbage. And these guys get up there and they want to walk their statements back, and nobody who supports them is calling them out on it. Like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Wait a minute, dude. Wait a minute. Wait, hey. You the one pushing for it. But this is how they operate, because they think people are stupid. And to an extent, they are right, because a lot of people are stupid. They're not going to call them out on it. They're not going to call them out on their double take. Bro, they are stupid if they think social media forgets their buffoonery. I agree with that. Yeah. Who was pushing defund the police last year? It wasn't Republicans. It wasn't Orange Man. It wasn't Donald Trump pushing that mess. It was you liberal Democrats out there. You Black Lives Matter people out there. You Chaz and Chop people out there. You Antifa folks. You all were the ones pushing it, not the Republicans. And you all just sitting there silent like, nothing to see here. You all were the ones pushing it, because you all wanted to sell this pap that Black people are being hunted down by the police. Therefore, we need to defund the police in order to keep Black people from being victimized by the police. And I listened to some of these talking heads and everything. This is why I don't trust them, because they act like they talk for the rest of us. They're out there talking about, oh, if you're a Black person, I know you're afraid of being killed by a cop when you get pulled over. I've never been afraid of getting killed by a cop. Yeah, I might be nervous because I'm like, oh, we'll pay this ticket. Well, I'm not afraid of that cop killing me. I had never had a cop put his hand on his gun when he walked up to my car. I've never been told, hey, sir, get out the car. I have never been told to get out the car by a cop. Never. Well, you're one of the lucky ones. That's my point, though. Don't talk like you talk for all of us. And let me say something to you white people out there. Let me just say this, and I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. Get a freaking backbone. Your patronization is not helping me.
Oh, I am white, and I know I got some privilege, and I'm going to use my privilege to do better.
Man, shut up. Sit down somewhere. Now, if you are white and you know you're not a racist, don't sit there and try to patronize me.
Yes, Black man, I understand.
I might slap you if you come up to my face and tell me,
Black Lives Matter.
I'll probably punch you in the face. I'm not that type of person, people. I'm just saying that to be funny. But white folks, get a spine. I am sick and tired of going on these news programs and seeing you all sitting up there like, yes, I'm going to use my privilege to make this world a better place. You think these Black Lives Matter types
care about your patronization. You can sit there and talk about all the privilege you have all you want to. Them rascals don't care. They still see you as another white boy. And because you're white, they still see you as another racist. They don't care. I don't see any of them getting up saying, hey, look, these white people, they're really coming to join our cause. Oh, man. Yo, fist bump, man. Get us fine, white people. Because I can guarantee you less than 999,000% of any of white people that I have encountered in my life, I can point to them and say that that person was a racist. And I grew up in the 70s and 80s. I can't point to one situation and say, well, I wasn't able to get this done because a white person got ahead of me. Not one time. And when I see these people up here talking about, oh, black people everywhere, they're so scared of the police, and they're this and they're that, and this is what's going. And I'm sitting there like, nobody's ever talked to me about this. Nobody's ever talked to me. Nobody's ever come up to me and say, Vincent, are you having a problem with white people? I tell you, no, I'm not having a problem with white people. Now get out of my face. I know I sound kind of loud today, people, but this thing just makes me so passionate, you know, when I see this mess going on. And my sister Retta up in New York City, her favorite word is buffoonery, and I'm going to have to steal that word from her, because that is what is going on in this country. It's a lot of buffoonery. And sometimes I do want to take my very sizable hands and wrap them around the neck of some of these so-called black leaders and just shake the living dust out of them and tell them, you do not speak for me. Because a lot of the garbage that you are pushing hasn't happened to me. And don't sit there and say I'm one of the lucky ones, because I'm a very nondescript black person. I don't live under a rock somewhere. I'm out and about every single day, out there in the open. And if any police officer wanted to harass me, they had every reason to. A few months ago, I'm on Interstate 40 going home. Hear a little sound, look on my dashboard, my tire's going flat. So I had to pull over to the side, I called 911. Two white police officers came. Them rascals sat there and changed my tire for me. Put the spare tire on so I was able to go to the tire shop and get my tire fixed. Very cordial. They didn't look at me and say, let's see, he's a black guy. We gotta shake him up. They didn't even ask for my license or all right, Vincent, be careful with that hoodie. You know, the police officers, they looking out for people who are wearing hoodies. You gotta be careful. Man, look, I am not studying them police officers one bit, because number one, let me tell you something. I'm not a lawbreaker. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I don't get nervous when I see the police officers. And maybe if you get nervous around the police officers, maybe you're doing something you shouldn't have no business doing. I remember going to a convenience store one time, had my hoodie on. Two white police officers sitting in the back. I went back there, got whatever I wanted to get, saw the police officer, shook their hand, thanked them for their service. They then look at me and say, hey, he's wearing a hoodie. Hey, you, with the hoodie, get on the floor. Lewis, I think we got a live one here. Go into the car, get the dog. No, that didn't happen.
I mean, folks, come on now. Come on. And I've never had a problem with the police. I ain't afraid of the police. I'm not afraid, this might be the day I meet my maker. No. Police don't scare me. I hear people talking about, yeah, when a police officer came to my window, he had his hand on his gun. Now, some of these stories, now, I'm not sitting here trying to deny that is what happened, but I do get a little suspicious at these stories because a lot of times people say stuff, they want you to think a certain way so you can feel pity for them. I'll give you a good example. Bubba Wallace, the race car driver. The race car driver who has a little cream in his coffee, think about it. He's half black, half white, but he identifies as black. He gets up there, he talks about, there was a noose in my garage. Someone put a noose in my garage. Turned out it wasn't a noose in his garage. It was a looped cord that they used to pull the garage door down. But everyone, and you still got people who support Bubba Wallace on that. They don't call him out or anything. Same thing with Jesse Smollett, or as some people call him, Juicy Smoulier. He gets out there, yeah, I'm walking at nighttime, 20 degrees below zero. I'm going to Subway to get me some sandwiches. And these two white guys with MAGA hats come out. They put a noose around my neck and pour bleach on me and saying, this is MAGA country. Found out that was a lie. But you know what? The Trump haters, they didn't call him out on it either. He still has a lot of people's support for a lie that he told. So if you could be telling me anything, the police officer, he talked to me harshly and everything. You know, and a lot of times when you see people tell these stories and everything, a lot of times they embellish the story a little bit. Case with Sandra Bland. People all over the earth with Sandra Bland saying, the police killed Sandra Bland. No, Sandra Bland killed herself. She killed herself for something minor. And, you know, she caught the attitude with the police because they pulled her over because she didn't signal when she changed lanes. Nothing. All she had to do was say, okay, officer, what's the problem? Oh, you changed lanes and you didn't have your signal light on. But she wanted to cop an attitude. Now, I do believe the police could have handled that situation a little bit better, but I digress. She didn't have to cop an attitude with the police officers. She gets in, they put her in jail, do her mugshot and everything, put her in jail, and next thing you know, she takes a trash bag and hangs herself. And then you got people saying, well, why did they put her in a jail cell with a trash can with a trash bag in it? They wanted her to kill it. Really? Y'all got to be kidding me. You really got to be kidding me. But you still hear people talk about, yeah, Sandra Bland, yeah. They killed Sandra. No, Sandra Bland killed herself. And you got people even say that when they took her mugshot, she was dead then, but they just made her look like she was alive. I say, and then you all want to look at the people on the right and call them conspiracy theorists? Seriously? You all got to be outside of your freaking minds. And I tell you, folks, you know, there's much prayer that needs to be done in this country. There's a lot of prayer that must be done in this country. And black folks, let me tell you all something. You are not special. You are no special than any white person, any Asian person, any Hispanic. You are not special. And don't take it that you're just a bunch of innocent people being harassed by these white folks. And y'all want to talk about the Ku Klux Klan being the terrorist group in this country and everything. Tell me, how many people had a Ku Klux Klan murdered in the past 50 years?
Well, we don't know, but I tell you, it's a lot. Tell me how many they murdered. Tell me. Now, don't get me wrong. The Ku Klux Klan is a bunch of boneheads. Yeah, they are. But tell me, how many people have they murdered in this country compared to how many black people have killed other black people? How many black people have been killed by other black people? But you see, y'all want to ignore that because that carries a negative stigma with it. You want to ignore how many black people are murdered by other black people because that carries a negative stigma with it. Black people in this country probably kill more black people in a month than the police have killed than the police have killed in probably the past 10 years. But we don't talk about that. We might get some discussion about it on the local level, but as far as national, nah. You might get a few people march out, talk about stop the violence, but that's going to be at the local level. It's not going to hit national, like with a George Floyd or a Breonna Taylor or Tamir Rice or Sandra Bland. See, we know those numbers. See, we know those names. We can rattle those names off at the top of our head because they burn it into us through the media. But they don't burn names into our heads like, I don't know, Jasmine Barnes or Sequoia Turner or Tony Temple or Daniel Shavers. But we all know Trayvon Martin. We all know Michael Brown. But we don't know the more innocent of us that meet the end of their lives at the hands of another melanated person. And folks, like I said, I say this so that you can get something out of this program. I say a lot of these things because I want you to think. Because a lot of people, they don't think with their brains. They think with their tongues. I remember watching this comedy. I think it was from the 80s, Charles in Charge with Scott Baio. I don't remember all the characters in that show, but there was this one character who was kind of doofy, you know. You know, the grease is hot, but the fish ain't frying. But the main character, he turns to his friend and he says, "Do you have a thought process? Or do the words just fall out of that hole in your brain into your mouth?" And that's the same question I like to ask a lot of people who push this liberal agenda, this social justice agenda. That's what I want to ask them. Because a lot of them, they just react right there on the spot. They don't wait for the evidence to come. White cop kills black person. White cop is a racist. He's a member of the Ku Klux Klan. He's a member of the Aryan Nation. He must go to jail. We need justice. Come on, justice, justice, justice. Who's that chick that got killed the day Derek Chauvin was convicted? I forgot her name. But she was about to stab someone, and a police officer sprinkled her with pepper. I forgot that girl's name. But people wanted to say, you know, LeBron James wanted to put that police officer's name, face up, you know, hey, this is the guy that shot that girl. Yeah, the girl was in the motion of stabbing another woman. But all they saw was, white cop kills black girl. She was only 16 years old. Yeah, 16. What in the world is a 16-year-old doing with a butcher knife about to stab someone else? Someone answer that for me. Anyway, I have come to the top of the hour. Let me go on do my little advertisements. And when that is over, I will come back to you and hopefully to the phones. I had two callers in here. They left. I don't know. I guess they think I talked too much. But, you know, you are listening to Black by Color Only on CNM Radio.
Welcome back to the Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, and, of course, companionship. Now, let's see him in action. Look how he makes eye contact with his person. That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive, and now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance will come in with this group.
But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Conservatives are always fighting to find a place they can call home. And every time we find one, the leftists in this nation take that away. Well, we have a new home now, and all you have to do is go in and join. Bite Me in the Basement is that site where we can join in to get our voices heard by others who feel the same way as we do. Just join BiteMeInTheBasement.com and join us for a rousing discussion of American patriotism and become a member. Learn things that you can do to help America become great again, to stop the lawless things that are going on, so we never have to see another fraudulent election like the one that put America-hating Joe Biden into the White House, and now he shouldn't even be there. That's BiteMeInTheBasement.com, and join patriotic Americans for a vision for a future America.
Welcome back to the show. We are back. We are back. Call-in number is 646-478-5284. And just a little side note here. Those of you all know the power of prayer. We really need to pray for our president, Joe Biden. I know some of you all out there like, he ain't my president. Well, he is. Even though I question how he got elected, but we need to pray for him because it seems like every week he goes further into cognitive decline. The guy doesn't even, sometimes he can't even, I don't even think he knows where he is or where he lives or who he is. And he gets up there talking. And I say, now, this is the person that y'all said won 15 million more votes than Barack Obama. And to be honest with you, I find it very hard to, I don't see anyone really singing his praises. I really don't. Even those who voted for him. And whenever he has a rally or a meeting or something like that, very few people come to it. It makes you wonder, how in the world did this guy get elected? But people want to assure themselves, oh, we made the right choice, you know, and everything. And they'll keep on singing his praises even when he leaves and whatever. They'll keep saying, just like they did Obama. Obama did good for this. What did he do good for this nation? Obamacare. Oh, yeah, raising people's premiums by three times, you know, tripling their premiums. Oh, yeah, he did a good job. Yeah. But really, he does need a lot of prayer. He does. But man, what is that? Is that a fruit bat flying in here? Do I see a fruit bat? Oh, my goodness. One day to fix that fruit bat alarm, you know, that's that's part of the, I guess you'd call it an icon of this show, is that fruit bat alarm. I'm going to have to get that thing fixed. I think I got it too loud. I don't know why it's so loud or whatever, but I might have to delete it and reinsert it back into the sound cue. But that's my fruit bat alarm, and that means I'm about to go to the phones, which means this is the warning. Don't come in here with your character assassinations and ad hominem attacks and your insults and your trolling and coming in here trying to disrupt the show, because it will prompt me to push the kick button or the ignore button, and you will go bye-bye, okay? I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me. I have no problem with that, you know. That's how you get discussions going, you know. Someone agrees with something, someone doesn't agree with it. Have a discussion, come to a point, you know. One person comes to his point of view, another person comes to their point of view. We hug each other, you know, walk in love, and that's that. But if you're not a person who wants to listen or whatever, then you'd best hang up right now, because I will do it for you. That is what I call the curse of the fruit bat. But having said all that, let me go to the phone. Let's see. Who is this? This is a number I've never seen before right here. Hello, welcome to the show.
Man, Vince, I got all these Marxists and progressives and liberals. They call me a coon. They call me a race traitor. They call me a colonized mind. And now I got you maybe ready to call me a fruit bat. I can't win for losing. And you know this ain't right. This ain't right.
You are anything but a fruit bat, my brother.
All right. Well, I'll accept that, and I appreciate that, and thank you for lifting me out of the abyss. But look here, man. Look here. I got to say this, man. It's rare. I mean, this is such a target-rich environment for anyone who is in the business of highlighting and explaining madness, lunacy, dementia, and bizarre of the utmost degree. It's really hard to know where to start. It's the only thing I hate about it. It's such a target-rich environment. Where do you begin? But I got to say this about the critical race theory movement. Now, help me understand this, Vince, because I'm having trouble wrapping my mind around it. They're going all out to try to convince us they're not teaching critical race theory in public schools, because they say it's an academic course designed for graduate students, you know, graduated from K through 12 and are going to college. And it's a legal theory anyway. Yet here at the same time, we got the president of National Education Association, Randy Weingarten, saying they have now created a legal fund to defend all those teachers who are teaching critical race theory that they said they ain't teaching.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know about you, but this creates what you might say at the very least is a contradiction. Maybe they didn't learn that word. Maybe they don't teach that word in school anymore. What do you think?
Seeing how some of our school children are not proficient in English, that might be a point.
It might be. But look here, man, this is what's amazing, man. I've done my research like I always do whenever these things come up, so I can counter the lies that will inevitably follow whenever the left tries to deny anything, and I have got right in front of me on my computer 30 school districts that have adopted critical race theory by not saying it's critical race theory. You know what they've done? They've adopted a book that is recommended for fourth through sixth grade students. And it's called Not My Idea. And it's on the web. You can get it from Amazon, from a whole bunch of places you want. And it goes into all of the principal elements of critical race theory without admitting it's critical race theory. It's supposed to be a corrective history to the racism that hasn't been properly taught in public schools. So they criticize things like whiteness, like the fact that white people had this inclination to conquer implicitly because they were white, and any number of the very injustice is a systemic trait that is built into our constitutional and legal system. And it's all there in the book called Not My Idea. But they don't say it's critical race theory just because they don't attach the name critical race theory to it. See, it's not really critical race theory. So they can say, see, we're not really teaching critical race theory. These people really think it's slick. They really think all of us are stupid. They literally think they can start year zero anytime they want to start the year zero.
You know, hit the reset button and let's just do this thing all over again.
We're not going to notice. It is astonishing.
And
just like the example I gave about last year's fund the police. The example you gave was, let me tell you why you gave such a great examination. Because what is really perhaps most shocking and dismaying about all this is the degree to which, I don't even think it's most white Americans, but I think it's such a substantial number of them that are simply acquiescing and rolling over and revealing their bellies when they're confronted with. They are so afraid to say something that it could be construed as either politically incorrect or racist, they literally have lost their ability to critically reason. Literally. And they have
and
no
response
to this Marxist bullying and intimidation.
That's why I said earlier in the show that white people need to get a spine. They really do. Stop this, you know, your pandering and your patronization is not working. It's not working with me, definitely, because I'm like, look, first of all, if you have never said a racist thing or committed a racist act or anything or done anything because of your so-called privilege, then what are you pandering for? I mean, don't come apologizing to me because of what your grandfather did to my grandfather. Did you do it? You know, I mean, and it's real maddening when they do this kind of mess. You know, sometimes I just want to just grab them by the collar and just slap them a few times.
Not only is this thing a divisive and racist and demagogic and destructive. Not only is it all of those things, it is bad legal theory. And as in the case of the 1619 Project, which is not precisely critical race theory, but it's certainly a first cousin of it. Examples like that, you know, even though it was a journalistic effort, supposedly. It's that in that case, it's shoddy, inaccurate, uncontextualized history, utterly lacking in perspective. Frequently, it's riddled with errors of fact or lies of omission or outright distortions. It is really bad history. And in fact, when you look at the way the New York Times had to issue a tepid, to be sure, but an apology for its inaccuracies, when well-known, well-regarded historians pointed out the innumerable errors and falsehoods in it, and when even Nicole Hannah-Jones herself, in a Facebook Twitter feed, regretted her lack of perspective and nuance, she said. This was just our own work.
I mean, I tell you. And
you
a lot of times,
it
gets so frustrating and makes you speechless. You're like, man, you know, let me just leave this alone. But let me get this other caller on here. I think I know who this is. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Hey, the gang's all here.
Got Bianchi in the house.
Yeah, I was getting ready to get me a badge too that said fruit bat. I'm beginning to worry here for a minute. Everybody's having fun but me. You know, good afternoon to you too, Mr. Sarge. You know, you made some points when you mentioned some names. And names apparently that was brutalized by the police. Well, let's go over some of those just real quick. It ain't going to take that long. You made the point that you said that when a police officer or somebody did approach them, they always got their hand on their gun. Well, you know what that is? The last five blacks they had encounters with was just horrible encounters. And maybe some of them may have been near death. So they have been conditioned that when you confront a black person, quote unquote, you better have your hand on your gun. It's not you. It's the other ones that look like you, that act like damn savages and totally non-compliant when they met the police officer. So now after doing that 5, 6, 7, 10 times, well, what do you expect they're going to be cautious about?
You got a point there, and that's the very thing I thought of, too. I was like, you know, a lot of times these police officers, when they encounter these black folks, a lot of times they give them a lot of flack. And so now they're like, and it ain't because you're black, you know, and they keep wanting to push that thing. But nobody ever thinks about, hey, maybe he had an encounter with some black people before, and now he's like, okay, I'm not going to be too careful this time, you know. So
if you have a bad experience with a woman named Keisha, then you meet another one named Keisha, bad experience. Another one named Keisha, bad. Well, what do you expect you're going to do when you meet the next Keisha? You're going to run like hell.
Exactly.
Let me give you another point you were talking about. This ain't going to take long. Trayvon Martin. How old was he?
He was 17 when he got plugged.
All right. Yeah. He's a teenager. When I was a teenager, when my daughter was a teenager, I taught her that if you're someplace and you're followed by a suspicious-looking adult, run to a place of safety.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to fight an adult. You're a teenager. Why didn't he do that? I'm sure his parents taught him. Let's look at another one, Mike Brown. When you're walking down the middle of the street there on Canfield Avenue and a police emergency vehicle is coming, they go to respond to a call. Matter of fact, it was a black young lady, young girl, kid that was choking or something like that.
Yep, certainly was.
And they got to take time to go around you, and when the guy go around you, tell you get on the sidewalk and you be telling them to get effed and so on and so on and so on. And now this is where I fought him. I wouldn't have came back, but he put his car in reverse and came back. Then supposedly Brown came around on the passenger side and reached in the window and tried to take the man's gun. A round went off in the car. Then you realize what you mistakes you made. Then you start walking away. Well, that man ain't gonna let that. The cop ain't gonna let that just slide like that.
No.
Mm-mm.
Let's talk about another one, Sandra Bland. Sandra Bland got killed. When she ended up dead, how many people came out protesting? Probably 1,000, right? Let's just put it at a round number like that. Well, damn, if those 1,000 people would have put 50 cents together and bailed her out, she wouldn't have been in jail.
Yep.
Just 50 cents. Eric Gardner, New York. Out there selling loose cigarettes. You buy a pack of cigarettes and you break them over and you sell them one by one to people who's got a craving for cigarettes. They're willing to pay you more than nearly what a pack is worth. And you're doing it outside of a merchant store that's selling products based on the business license that they paid for in order to be in operation. And I don't think he had any vendor's license or street peddling license. The police come up and say, look, I got to do an investigation on you. Turn around so I can put the handcuffs on. Oh, no. What for? What did I do? Court's in session on the street. Here comes the judge. So it ends up like, and that's, you know, in any of these, we're not glad to see anyone get killed. But my goodness, just like you talked about, you know, I walked up to a police, he was outside of my house that I built, and I've since moved from there because the neighborhood just got too damn bad. And I walked up to him, he got out of his car, out there in the street, and I said, "How you doing?" And he said, "I'm just looking at this your house," and said, "Oh, by the way, I got a pistol on me." And he looked at me and said, "That's okay, I wish more like you had them." And we began to talk.
Wow. Wow, okay.
And let me look over here in the mirror to make sure I'm black, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah. Look, I've been pulled over 3 times. Every time the officer came in the car, one of the first thing I told him, I'm armed with a fire. I got a handgun on my right hip. What do you want to do with it? Obviously, okay, for my safety and yours, for the duration of the stop, I'm going to remove it. I tell him where I'll do it. I put my hands out, let him go on my holster, take it out of the holster, and then the stop would be conducted from there. He would see my credentials, see I'm a retired cop. We'd have to say, "Well, I stopped you because you didn't stop completely at the stop sign," or whatever. And he'd say, "Well, but it's no big deal. Now that I see you're a copper, and I wouldn't wrote you a ticket if you wasn't anyway. I just want to give you a warning. If all your stuff is in order, you may now proceed." And it was every one of them was similar to that. Every stop. And I tell them right away, first thing, I got a handgun on me. Here's where it's located. They take it from me for the duration of the stop. When the stop was over, it was returned to me, and both of us went over on our way. None of us the worse for harm. But here's what Bianchi said a little while ago. I might take a little bit of exception with you. I don't think that just because an officer's had bad experience with black people, even with names like LaQuisha and LaWanda, that that's any reason to act other than the way you would normally act in a normal encounter. But here's the thing, Bianchi. Police officers do actually stop you because you actually fit the description of a suspect. Or there are circumstances under which, because you don't know what a police officer knows. Police officers got roll call. When they go to roll call, that you know, they get assembled at roll call. They stand in there, their weapons inspected. They'll take a look at the uniform real quick. And then he goes over information roll call, where they give out information of recent crime activity and suspects they're looking for and complaints from the citizens and various information and intelligence that the department has gathered. And, you know, you got your colleagues. You talk to them about their experiences over the previous weeks, days, and months. And you got snitches who are telling you things and people on your beat and in the street. They're giving you the information. You got a wealth of information. The worst cop knows 1,001 things about everything. Some of it's good information. Some of it's bad information. But you better believe he's got a lot of information. And he's got to make a decision as he comes up upon a person. And let's face it. This is where we do us a disservice by not acknowledging reality. The reality, as Bianchi pointed out, of the staggering amount of violent crime in the black community. You're naturally going to have more of these incidents to investigate. So the police officer has all this knowledge of the circumstances, the fact that this individual comports with the knowledge of these circumstances, and that he is going to take action based on this information. Among those actions may be preparing to draw his firearm if and when this suspect, who he may think has a propensity for violence based on his information and or experience, even with the individual who he may know in some way, he may have his hand on his gun, prepared to draw it. And see, people get resentful about this, like, and they don't know what this officer knows or why he's done it. Now, look, I would do my best, usually, not always, but usually, if there's nothing stopped and turns out the person, I got no reason to detain him any further, I'd give him a brief explanation as to why. I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing that, trying to generate a little goodwill. I mean, you are denying someone their liberty and their freedom, and I took that very seriously. I kind of felt I had an obligation to explain to him why I did it. But believe me, There ain't nothing at the time I was an officer. There wasn't a thing that was going to prevent me from doing my duties. I saw it when I saw the need to do it. And if it meant I had to take him into custody for obstructing justice or resisting arrest, that was exactly what I was going to do, and I wasn't going to be apologetic about it. You're going to comply with my lawful orders, or you're going to jail, or you're going to defeat me and get away, but that's going to be the only outcome. Ain't nothing else going to happen.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something else, too. They used to talk about police have quotas on traffic tickets. If you're trying to meet a quota, even a minuscule quota on traffic tickets in the hood, you might as well forget it. Because everyone that you write is going to take an hour, hour and a half. By the time you go through all the street justice, street trials, by the time you go through that, you don't waste an hour and a half. It ain't that many hours in the day on your shift. That's the way that's the way it is. I mean, that is the way it is.
Yeah.
And I don't know what caused that.
Yeah, it's sad that it is that way. It doesn't have to be that way, but, you know, it's sad that it is because, you know, you got so many people who are on edge and they think, oh, the police, they're just out here to harass me and 'cause I'm black and everything. And people are starting to they're starting to fall for that mess. You know, I would even say some of the white police officers themselves, they're starting to fall for it. You know, I got to take it easy because, you know, I'm a white guy and, you know, this is a black guy. So I got to take it easy and everything, you know, and it shouldn't be like that. It really shouldn't be like that. You know,
Vince, police officers these days are openly talking. You know the term they're using? When they talk about what you just described, they got a term for it. They call it going fetal. They're going fetal.
Yeah.
They're slowing down.
Yeah.
They're not taking into account things they normally would have investigated. They're answering calls, to be sure, and they're taking all the requisite action at a call. But things that are discretionary, they're not found. That's why this stuff is skyrocketing. You see, what we're missing now is the deterrent effect of the police, particularly the police who do constitutionally valid, warranted Terry stops, stop and frisk. The cops are definitely cutting back on that. And that has a big effect on crime deterrence and detection of criminals who are armed illegally, particularly with firearms.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you.
We are seeing the effect of it.
I'm going to tell you something. And this past Thursday, July the 22nd, marked 52 days from Memorial Day this past May, Memorial Day weekend, which ended that Monday, I mean Tuesday. 950 blacks been shot in Chicago in 52 days.
Lord have mercy.
Wow.
And 130 of murdered.
Man.
I repeat that again. It ain't me. This ain't the final call, or this ain't the white supremacy Tribune. These are black newspapers. Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times, and ABC 7 Chicago. This is their reporting. Can you imagine that? Well, I tell you what, last year, from Memorial Day 2020 until the beginning of Memorial Day weekend, just here about 50-some-odd days ago, you had 4,845 blacks shot by other blacks with 745 murdered. Can you imagine that? Then add on this 9,000. We talking about close to 5,000 blacks that have been shot a little bit over a year. You know, the preponderant thing to me on this is where in the heck are you finding all these people to shoot? And sooner or later, you should run out.
That's a good question.
Bianchi, I'm telling you something, Bianchi. You know what? But you know, all of that you said, of course, is accurate and true. But you know what's compounding it and making it far more worse than it has to be? Chicago is cursed with the worst mayor it's ever elected in its entire history. And it has, even worse at the same time, the worst state's attorney to ever exist in Cook County, Illinois. Cook County, Illinois, United States of America. Kemp Fox is an utter, complete, total train wreck. The way she runs the department is horrific.
Well, I thought that one of the problems that we had, that blacks have in this country, and I ain't talking about all blacks. Anybody that's listening, I ain't talking about all. Y'all know what you know, that those out there that don't experience this crime against you, you had to suffer through it at the hands of some other black person. And we're not saying that if you live amongst another group, you probably would experience something sooner or later. But ain't nowhere in the country you have this type of numbers being produced. Nowhere in the country. But here's the thing. We used to talk about we need to have black elected officials because they are more sympathetic. They come from the culture. And they're more likely to understand you. Well, hell, in Chicago, like Clark said, you got a 4'2" black female openly gay mayor whose husband is about 7'2", a white woman, and that ain't got nothing to do with it. I'm just wanting to put that out there so people can picture what I'm talking about. The second in power in the state of Illinois is the lieutenant governor. She's a black female. The number one cop in the state of Illinois, the attorney general, Waul Muhammad, he's a black male. The person that's in charge of all kind of records and stuff like that in the state of Illinois, he's a black male. Then as Sarge mentioned, the number one prosecutor in Cook County, which Chicago sits in, Kemp Fox, she's a black female. The one that's associated with Jesse Smollett, remember him?
Yeah, she covered for him.
But wait a minute. Let's take a little trip down. Let's take a little trip down south from Illinois, Chicago. Let's go over into St. Louis. You got another first black female St. Louis City prosecutor, happens to be named Kim Gardner. Now, remember what I was telling you earlier about these Lakeishas? Sooner or later, you get the hell away from them. But
they start getting redundant, don't they?
Yeah. When she gets elected, the Democrats put her up into filing charges against the newly elected governor, Eric Greitens, on a charge saying that he took pictures of his nude girlfriend. She didn't know nothing about it. And this went on and went on until they got in court. She's supposed to produce the evidence. Guess what, Sarge? It ain't no evidence.
What else was you?
Where is the pictures? Then, just recently, her office has been accused, as it has been accused for a long time, of letting these criminals go. You had an arrangement in a court for a murderer. I think the guy's name was Bland. And this is the third time he's appeared in front of the judge, and the prosecutor are supposed to show up and then leverage these charges. Well, this last time, ain't nobody show up from the prosecutor office. So guess what the judge do? He dismisses the case and put this murderer back out on the street. And what is the excuse of the prosecuting office? Well, the one that was supposed to go there is off on maternity leave.
They missed court dates, Bianchi. Three. The judges said in request to the prosecutor's office, will you please send an attorney here to represent the people's case? They didn't send nobody for 3 months, three hearings.
Wait a minute. It don't end there. And I ain't making this stuff up. Google it, goddammit. She's the one that prosecutes the McCloskeys. Because they come out on the front of their home when you have this Black Lives Matter mob.
Yep.
They live on a private street. The mob breaks the gate down.
Yep.
Kick the door in. Jack Book thugs kick the door in. And comes on the street because they want to protest in front of the mayor's house, Lida Cruzan. Well, first place, Lida Cruzan don't even live on that street, do you dummies?
Oh, my God. It's hard.
Secondly,
if we made these storylines up, people would say we were exaggerating. They would.
They kicked the gate down because they didn't want to come through by the guard shack because the street has a private security. They didn't want to come that way. They kicked the gate down, which is chain. You got to chain it in that neighborhood because anybody would be coming up in there.
Yeah, and the gate's got a lock on it, too. They kicked through the lock and the chain and the padlock on the gate.
They came through there like King Kong. You just can't believe this stuff, man. I honest to goodness. And then with blacks, and see, here's another thing, too, Vincent. You talking about the police. And then you got people saying that the police is killing black folks. That's that group over there that's waging that argument. Well, if that's the case, Sarge, in Ferguson, Missouri, with all the rioting and looting that went on during 2014, the Mike Brown incident, guess what? The blacks that had been living in that area for a long time because they fled criminality in North St. Louis, which is adjacent to that outlying county community. They moved there back in the late 60s and 70s, bought homes, established homes, put money in them, kept well-treated lawns and repairs and paid for the school district. Guess what? Now, this is on this thing that you say that white police is killing blacks because the NAACP in St. Louis put out a moratorium to travelers, black travelers coming to Missouri, warning them you could get shot by a white police officer. If y'all think I'm lying, check it out.
No, I remember
NAACP put out a moratorium to black travelers traveling through Missouri. Don't come through St. Louis or maybe Missouri, period, because you stand a chance of being killed by a white police officer.
Yep.
Well,
and that's when the NFL started hands up, don't shoot. And that was another lie, proven to be a lie by multiple eyewitnesses.
Yeah, now, wait a minute. It starts to get good here now. Hang on. You sit down, Vincent. Blacks in Ferguson up and fled. You know where they fled to? They fled west across the Missouri River into St. Charles County and reestablished residency. What is so peculiar about St. Charles County? St. Charles County is 99% white, and the police departments are all white, if not a vast majority white. So what I'm saying, if they're scared of white supremacy, if they're scared of white police officers, when they flee these black fools, why do they run to white communities?
Yep.
I don't think it's the black folks that are doing the fleeing. It's the elite black people who are profiting off of the racial industrial complex, who are doing all this agitating to enhance their position and make a buck. Black Lives Matter and the founders of Black Lives Matter are proof of that pudding.
Mm-mm-mm.
And you know the fun thing about Ferguson. Ferguson was about close to 70% black population, 67% on August 2014. And they've been there for a long time. I can tell you that because Delwood right next to it, I can tell you some stories about Delwood. But let's talk about Ferguson. Ferguson had a police department of about 53 police officers in different shifts. About 51 of them was white. The mayor Knowles, was white. Now, let me ask you this. If blacks were not satisfied with the police department, if they were not satisfied with the mayor, for all of them the decades that they lived in Ferguson, at the population majority that they were, why didn't they change it? You know why they didn't change it, Sarge? Because they want tough, kick-ass police in their community.
I think you're right, yes.
That's what they want, especially when you living next to a Castle Point, especially when you living next to a Berkeley, and especially when you living on the outskirts of North St. Louis. They want that type of police operation going on. They don't want no candy butts.
I can guarantee you, Donkey, I can guarantee you that this noise we're hearing is not coming from the community, the grassroots in the community. It is coming from activists and elites who want to fundamentally transform the society and the method of governance, and they want to start with the police. It's not coming from folks on the street, because folks on the street want to be protected from the criminals in their midst who will hurt and kill them. They don't have time for this navel-gazing exercise in Marxism.
My grandson used to play baseball at the baseball diamond at Ferguson Kemp, a public park with baseball and softball diamond. It's called Forest Wood. You don't believe me? Look it up. It's over there behind the Ferguson Market where Mike Brown was selling, they say he was selling drugs and also them cigarillos. You got what was some townhouses behind that. They all Section 8 practically now. And further on down the road, you got Forest Wood Park. It used to be a nice park where kids could come play. Teens would travel there to play. Games would last up until 10 o'clock at night. Guess what? You can't do that now. Nobody comes to the park to play ball. Therefore, the weeds have taken over the diamond. You can't bring your child there. They're playing basketball. They're drinking beer, gunshots, and every other damn thing. Anybody that bring their child around that environment is a damn fool. And I wasn't one. We do not go there anymore.
Yeah, you just reminded me of an incident that happened in Washington, D.C. I think it was this week. 6-year-old girl got murdered near where the Washington Nationals played. I used to walk that area coming home from high school back in '85 and '86. I used to, you know, this was long before they put the baseball field up there. Matter of fact, the last time I went to D.C. and I went by that area, I said, oh, this is where the Nationals play, because that area is familiar, because I used to, that's my old stomping ground over there near the Navy Yard up there on K Street where the Nationals play. And I was like, you know, some things just don't change. You know, that's Southeast D.C. right across the Anacostia River from 295 in D.C., and I'm like, see, and I think they offered like a $60,000 reward for the people who killed that girl. I think they got some suspects and whatever. But I think
that was just
recent. I think it was just this week.
Mm-hmm.
I said, now that's an area I'm familiar with, because I used to walk that street every day, because I take the bus from high school, get off over there. You know, traverse across the way, go to the Potomac Avenue metro station, and ride up to the Stadium Armory subway station where my grandmother lived. You know, right there in the shadow of RFK Stadium. You know, and I say, you know what? You know, I mean, 30 something years have passed, and the same thing is still going on, and no one's doing anything to change it. But you have these city council members, you have the governor, I mean the mayors, all of them are black. All of them are black, but they still ignore the bigger problem in their city, which is black on black crime. And they always want to look, you know, the police are shooting too many black people around here and whatever, you know. And see, I grew up in D.C. I one of my best friends, he got killed, you know, he got shot and killed on he was playing basketball, and he was right down the street from where my mom lived. And he got shot and killed, and they said it looked like he was trying to run to my mom's apartment after he got killed. They still haven't solved his murder. I have another friend. His brother got killed in D.C. They haven't solved his murder. And I think we're prioritizing the wrong things. We're ignoring the bigger problem, and that's why these problems keep going on. And this is why I'm so hard on my fellow black people. That's why I'm so hard on them, because – you know, we need to stop the foolishness. You know, like I said before, excuse me, my friend Retta saying buffoonery, that's her favorite word. And that's all that's going on is a bunch of buffoonery. You got these people, they choose to ignore the bigger problem, And the bigger problem keeps going on, but they sit there, well, what can we do about this? What can we do about this? Well, you all need to stop putting your eyes on the police officers, and you need to look at yourselves, you know, because, you know, first of all, we need to look at our communities and what can we do to straighten up our communities instead of just, oh, it's the police's fault. You know, they're gunning us down. And then when you point out the fact of black-on-black crime, you want to say, oh, this is because the white man, he did this to us, and this has destroyed our mentality, and that's why we kill each other. You know, it's time for it to stop, you know. And, you know, when you get to talking like this, we don't need the people coming up talking about, oh, you're a coon, and come on, y'all, come on. You need to look at the situation here. You know, stop ignoring the bigger problem and focus on the bigger problem. Stop focusing on this little petty end. Yeah, if a cop kills somebody, yeah, something has to be done about it and everything, but it doesn't mean that cop is a racist. You know, I mean, that's...
Well, when they call
the
you coon, when they call Sarge coon, or me as Uncle Tom, well, they are expressing racism towards you.
Yep.
With a black face.
Exactly.
See, here's another thing. We got to start calling this for what it is and stop playing around with it. We're beyond the two-minute warning. And you made a point about white folks. White folks need to get up off their ass and take back the things that that Americans have worked very hard and died for in order to maintain. Because blacks like you and I, Sarge, and there's more that's afraid to say anything because they stand to lose their job. They stand to be a ridicule. It's not enough.
I got to agree with you there. I mean, I think it's one of the most critical issues today. In order to save our liberty, and I mean ours, I mean Americans' liberty, at the very least Americans' notions of liberty, all of us got to stand up against this impending tide of flat-out tyranny. I've never seen the like. I mean, did you see what came down with this this collusion between the White House and high tech to censor speech? They're using these high-tech industries as proxies to pee all over the First Amendment. They had a White House email that got accidentally sent to someone. I can't think of his name right now. But they were talking about how they have to revive the idea of punishments for people who don't want to take the vaccine. See, they accidentally sent it to the wrong person.
Yeah, you're right.
Who was that? Was it Joe Concha? No, Charlie Kirk. They sent it to Charlie Kirk by mistake. And they were talking about punishments for people who didn't want to get vaccinated. The carrot's not working. We need to fly more of the stick. We're looking at tyranny these days, folks. It's right in our face.
At the beginning of this program, I was talking about because I work for UNC Health Systems here in North Carolina, and they sent an order up the pike on Thursday saying everybody who works for the UNC Health Center, they have to get the vaccination for COVID. And really, I don't work in a hospital. I work in a warehouse, and I help them supply computers and computer parts.
You know
to
what
the
you
hospital.
Should do? Get your religious exemption. Because I had a fellow here in St. Louis area. He had the same proclamation come down on him, and that's what he produced. Or his religious exemption. They stopped messing with it. That's the same type of exemption people used to travel. A group of people I used to travel to Africa. Where they wanted to require them to have their smallpox vaccination, a yellow card, and you would put it in your passport. Well, instead of putting a yellow card in the passport, they put a religious exemption. And when they got to the country they're going, they showed that, and everything was cool. If you don't want to take the shot, I don't believe in making people take things they don't want, especially when you have removed all liability and you put immunities with the manufacturer of what they want to shoot in your arm. That's a bunch of crap.
Yeah. And see, I mentioned that earlier, and my sister, Retta, she said, can you get a note from your doctor stating it's too dangerous for you to get it? And I said, I probably have to go to the doctor and maybe get a checkup or something and you know, get something done that way. But they're thinking about really.
You can get that immunity. They floating around everywhere. You can download it, fill it out, go get it notarized. You cool, or you should be.
And I'll probably look into that. I'll probably look into that. Because really, I feel like I made the best decision for me and my family, and I don't like some think tank telling me, you know, no, we know what's best for you, you know, and everything. And I mean, I thought the vaccination was supposed to keep you protected from it, but apparently some people from Texas, they decided to flee the state, and turns out six of them, they caught COVID, but they have been inoculated themselves, you know. Or so they say, you know. I'll just say that, so they say. Because a lot of times I don't believe a lot of things that I hear over TV too much anymore. But, that'll probably be something I'll consider. Because my boss asked me, he said, Vincent, are you a conscientious objector? And I said, yeah, kind of. But I'm not anti-vax. You know, I'm the type of person, I'm like, if you want to get the vaccine, that's fine. You know, go ahead. But if I make the decision not to do it, then no one should have to force me to do it because of some ideal or something like that. You know, it's great. And see, I caught it in December. I caught it this past December. And they tell you that, well, you'll only have immunity for 6 to 8 months. And I'm like,
bunch of crap. How long have human beings been on their planet? These people as hell. You know what's really the problem is that let me tell you something. Blacks talk about that they need to know, their kids need to know history and they need to know who they are. No. Teach your children science, mathematics, biology,
exactly.
Chemistry, electricity, magnetism. That's what your children need to know.
Yeah. And I agree with you 200% on that one, you know. And they're the very ones saying you need to learn history, but they don't know it themselves, you know. They're the very ones that they're always talking about science, but they don't know a bit of science themselves, you know. And I'm praying about it and whatever, and that might be something I need to
try
do.
Well, try
to
advance.
These are the same people who believe that a biological male can give birth.
Yeah.
Yeah,
do that best.
Yeah.
It has worked, and it should work. And I know that of your religious convictions, and you should not compromise your convictions, your Savior, for some off the wall, out of left field theory. I mean, you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
And you got to remember, we've got updates on the vaccine adverse reporting site run by the CDC. And they're speaking of, and they're trying to couch it in anodyne language like, oh, it's so rare. But even they're admitting people are dying, going to anaphylactic shock after getting the vaccine. So for some people, and it's certainly a minority of people, but it's certainly some people will have an adverse, even deadly reaction to this vaccine. And that is not something that should be ignored.
You're right.
Yeah.
And, you know, vaccines mutate. They mutate just like human beings mutate. You ever wonder why come you go to Nigeria and everybody is black, jet black? You go to South Africa, they a little brown and yellow. That's because they have mutated.
Yeah, exactly.
Viruses will mutate in order to do what? Survive.
Yeah. And see, the thing about it, I'm not concerned about if it's going to kill me or anything like it. I just don't like people telling me that I made the decision that I think is best for myself, but you think because you're in some higher up, you're an elite and everything, you can tell me what to do and just override my personal decision. That's the thing that bothers me more than anything, you know. I'm really not worried about it. You know, and I've heard about the adverse reactions people are having to it and everything. But
that doesn't
concern me that much. Yeah.
You might be lucky enough to have one yourself. You don't know. I wouldn't be taking it. Well, you know, I can't tell nobody what to do, but I ain't taking one.
Yeah.
I never took a vaccine. The only time I did was when I was very, very young. And they had something that we had to take. I don't know, it was measles or chicken pox or something, a rubella. I know I've had a tetanus shot. But the best the best vaccine that can produce is that which your body produces. That is, if
you
got everything about you up to date. You know, it's just like war. United States fought two theaters during World War II. They fought the European theater. They fought the Pacific theater with the Japanese. The European theater with Germany. Now, they done pretty good. What if they had to fight a theater down in South America? Well, would their defense be strong enough to do three at one time? Well, it's the same thing with your immune system in your body. If you got high blood pressure, if you got kidney problems, if you're obese, and all of a sudden here comes COVID. Well, your immune system is overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Exactly right. But, you know, I think people these days should have the right to refuse the vaccine for any reason they choose. I mean, I don't care what the reason is. And religious exemptions, because you are worried about adverse health reaction, because you just think it's stupid. I don't care what the reason is. That should be something that's completely within your right to reject. And no government should be able to force you to do it.
Yeah.
Well, not in the United States. You got the liberty.
Still in an experimental status.
That Constitution is your protector from government intrusion into your freedoms. That when you was born, Vincent, you had all the rights that bestowed upon the universe that can give you. You had all those rights. Only reason you don't have all the rights today that you had when you was born because governments have came along and enacted laws and ordinance and legislation that take them away from you. And that's what the Constitution was designed for. It's supposed to stop the intrusion by big government into your life.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, but here's what we're having a bit of a problem now, and we can see it working its way into the civilian world. Now, remember, it's a little bit different when you're a member of the armed forces. That's what I got to remind people. Those people in the armed forces sacrifice a lot of things to be in the armed forces. A lot of the constitutional rights you and I take for granted, people in the armed forces just don't have. They can order you to take a proven vaccine. They can order you. Now, they can't force it in your arm. Nobody's going to try to hold you down and give it to you if you refuse the order. But if you don't take the vaccine, especially one that's accepted and like by the FDA, proven to be effective at stopping the disease, they can order you to take it. And if you don't obey the lawful order to take the vaccine, then court-martial you, give you an Article 15 or whatever.
Yeah.
And see that? Yeah. Well, they're trying to see if they can get away with this. And I guarantee you, if they get away with it in the armed forces with this experimental drug, they're going to do everything they can to try to export it to the civilian world.
Yep, exactly. Well, guys, wow. It's always a pleasure having you guys on the show. I got a little less than a minute to go on the show. It's always a pleasure, Pianchi, Sarge. My sister up in New York City, Retta, it's always a pleasure having you guys. Thank you all for coming on the show. I'm going to take that into consideration, though, about the religious exemption.
Yeah, get the exemption. They out there. You can find them on the Internet. You can write one up. Go to the notary, have it notarized. You'd be cool. Anyway, take care of your family. Be safe. And I'll catch all of y'all.
Yeah, you definitely do
all
that.
Right.
You do that same, Pianchi. And look, Vince, I'm glad to hear you recover from this and glad to hear you got yourself a body full of antibodies.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you there, Sarge. Okay. Well, let me go ahead and end this show. Tomorrow I'm having a special edition of profit or loss. It's a situation I got to deal with, and I'm going to have a special edition of the show tomorrow. So if you'd like to come to that show tomorrow, 2:00 Eastern Standard Time, profit or loss. This is Vincent E. Brown. I am signing off, and until the next time, I'll see you guys on the rebound. Y'all have a good Saturday.